Well, I think we're ready to go here. So thank you, everybody, for joining us this morning for this hearing of the House Subcommittee on Elections. The hearing is being broadcast live on the House TV and Facebook Live. You can go to the House website and find that, as well as going on Facebook Live and type in House or MN House Info, and that should help get you there. Anybody who wanted to testify was asked to contact the seat, the committee administrator, by 6 a.m. this morning. I believe we do have a quorum present, and so we will proceed. This meeting is being held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, Emergency House Informations. That, of course, can be found on the Minnesota House website, allowing for meetings to be conducted by alternative means. Next, we have the minutes from April 8th, 2020, which I believe was the last time we met. Has anyone had a chance to look at it? Or can I call on one of you? How about you, Vice Chair, Representative Bonner?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for June 15th, 2020.
And I believe we can all do this as a voice vote. So if folks want to unmute yourself, if you're muted, or I don't know if Ms. Rudolph, if you can unmute everybody. All of those in favor of approving the minutes from April 8th, please say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Okay, we've conducted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll, just a point of parliamentary inquiry. There was no roll that was taken today, and Representative Bonner moved minutes from a meeting that did not exist from before this committee on June 15th. So maybe you want to step back and just take care of some of those housekeeping details. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I was informed that we're not having to actually take the actual roll call, but if it makes you feel that we're crossing our T's and dotting our I's, I'm certainly willing to do that. If the clerk, Ms. Fang, if you could quickly go through the roll call, and then we'll proceed to business.
Chair Dean.
Present.
Representative Bonner.
Present.
Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Representative Halverson.
Present.
Representative Mann.
Present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative New.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Present.
That's everyone.
Okay, so we have everybody getting a gold star for attendance today. Next, we will move on to our first bill before us, and that's House File 124, and that's a Representative Nash bill. I believe we're referring this to GovOps by a memo. So if you would like to move your bill before the committee and then present the bill, that would be great.
Mr. Chair.
Representative New.
I apologize. I raised my hand, but I've looked through my emails. I don't see the actual bill language in my emails anywhere from your committee LA or committee administrator. Was that sent out somewhere? Do we have the bill language for the two bills that we're hearing today?
I believe it might be, at least the link was sent out. And of course, if you quickly go to the committee page for our hearing today, that the link for both the bills up today will be are available.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually sending Representative New the link to House File 124. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 124 before the committee with intent to refer it to Government Operations. It is a pretty small change. It was brought to my attention by the Secretary of State that the bill that we worked on in a bipartisan manner had one small aspect that needed to be addressed in order to fulfill our desired legislative intent of having the Secretary of State's webpage on the evening of the election at the close of polls represent how many outstanding mail-in ballots or absentee ballots, to be precise, were still outstanding. So worked with House Research on this. I brought it to your attention, Mr. Chair, and you agreed, encouraged me to carry it myself. And if Mr. Gehring is on the line, if he could maybe walk through the very technical nature of what it is that we've changed, that way everybody can get the warm fuzzies on the bill.
Great. Thank you, Representative.
That is the official legislative term, warm fuzzies.
Warm fuzzies. We will
I'm all about warm fuzzies.
Enshrine that into the election subcommittee sort of language that we'll use in the future. Mr. Gehring, if you'd like to talk about the warm fuzzies, that would be wonderful.
Sure, Mr. Chair. So what this bill does, so under the current process for elections on election night, when you see results come rolling in Secretary of State's website, what you see are complete precinct results. So once a county is completed counting all of the people who voted in the precinct on election day, plus the absentee ballots that were received in that precinct, then you see a complete precinct that then is posted on the Secretary's webpage with results. What this bill would do would be allow counties to choose to release partial results from precincts. So this would be a precinct, for example, that they may have counted all the in-person votes from within the precinct on election day, but haven't gotten to all the absentee ballots that they received. So this would permit counties to post those partial results from what they have counted sort of to that point on the Secretary's webpage and to release those results. And then if they did so, they would need to post notice clearly that the results are reflect a partial count and would change as the additional absentee ballots are counted over the subsequent day or two. So that's the change. Basically, just it's permitting counties to post precinct results that are not fully completed and are only partial pending the completion of the counting of the rest of the absentee ballots.
Thank you, Mr. Gehring. And Mr. Chair, if it's necessary, thank you. I believe I saw Secretary Simon. If he wanted to testify, that's fine. If not, I leave that to you. I believe that it was described well enough, and our committee certainly worked hard enough to create a bipartisan bill that just needed this minor tweak to achieve the legislative intent that we had all wanted.
Thank you. Representative Simon, would you like to say a few words about House File 124?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't think I can top what's already been said. I don't really have anything to add other than it is a technical change and it will make election night a lot more meaningful for a lot more people if the counties and the local governments can report incomplete results. That's it. That's the bill.
Great. Thank you. Have you already given your closing statement, Representative Nash, and can we move to a vote?
Thank you for your green vote.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I believe we have a couple of questions. I have a question.
Oh, okay.
You. From my own side of the aisle.
Yeah,
that's right.
Welcome to a 8 a.m. Zoom call for some.
Nice.
I apologize. I did not see that, Representative New. Please, Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions. One, we keep using the term that the county is allowed to release the results of a partial count. Will If the county does that, because they can choose it, if the county does that, will that information be on the Secretary of State's website? And how will that be marked as incomplete?
Thank you, Representative New. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative New. Yes, it will be on our website. And there will be some sort of notation there that these are incomplete results, just as we do now in a regular election where it says it's unofficial results, which is technically true by statute. That will be noted. And if there are media inquiries or others, we would know.
Representative New.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up on that. We know that if you change anything in government, there's a fiscal note. It says there's no fiscal note on this. Does the Secretary of State's website already, is it already set up to be able to denote that these will be an incomplete count, or will there need to be some work on the back end to set up the website to be able to do that? And if so, it seems like there would be a fiscal.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative New. No, there's no cost to that. It would just be a simple addition that you could do on election night, just as we do with the unofficial results right now. I think it would only take a few minutes. There's no back-end work that any of us know about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I believe that Representative O'Driscoll has his hand up as well. So, Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Driscoll, the mistake that many of us make, you have to unmute yourself. There we go.
In this day of multiple different websites, I forget where all my buttons are on the Companion Public System I'm on.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, my first question is for the bill author, Representative Nash. Representative Nash, is this bill is an amendment to, or a housekeeping, as you said, on the bill that was bipartisanly and bicamerally supported and signed by Governor Walz earlier this year to help us to preserve our in-person balloting and to continue to preserve the absentee ballot process that we have in the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. Next question for Secretary Simon. Mr. Secretary, welcome to the committee and thank you for being here with us today. I was wondering if you could give the committee an update as to how we are now 60 days out from the primary. Things are going well. You're hearing good things from the local precincts. That's appropriated. The things that were in the bill are helping. I know I've heard from my district, from the county officials, they're very pleased that they were able to get this bill and to be able to do this. I was wondering if you just maybe, since we have this opportunity, to just update the elections committee on maybe a little bit of an update. I'm kind of scooping it under my questions for the bill.
Yeah.
I realize it's not an independent item, and you may not be completely ready, but I'm sure you have some information to share with the committee.
Secretary Simon, feel free to take this opportunity to talk about what's happened since.
Sure, I'll be brief, and I'm happy also to continue this discussion with any of you offline if you want to get more granular and more detail-oriented. But so far, you know, it's always cautious optimism. None of us know what the world's going to look like, certainly in November. We have a better sense now of what it's going to look like, I suppose, in August. But in November, if you're talking about the general election, we just don't know. And you look at what's happened in other states, Wisconsin, Georgia last week, there are real challenges sometimes. And so we've stood up 6 different working groups, believe it or not, with the counties and cities and townships where we meet routinely, I think weekly, with them to get through certain issues, everything from election judge recruitment to how we're going to report the results to supplies, for example, masks, wipes, disinfectants, things like that, buying those in bulk, buying those in an efficient manner and a distribution system to get those to every precinct in Minnesota. So we're working on it, but there's no question. You see something like happened in Georgia last week, and it gives not just me, but colleagues around the country a lot of pause. You see what can happen if things don't go well. And so some of that in Georgia as well is beyond people's control, but you got to get a handle on it as early as you can. So that's what we're spending a lot of time doing right now. So I would say cautious optimism. The one other thing, Representative O'Driscoll, I would say is people are really taking to ordering an absentee ballot to come to them at home, which, of course, as you know, because you voted for it, was as a law we've had on the books since 2013. It's basically no excuses absentee voting, which we've had for a long time. This isn't anything new. And people are really taking to it. We just crossed the 70,000 mark for people in Minnesota who have ordered that. Compared to 2 years ago and 4 years ago, it's more than 10 times, easily more than 10 times, probably more than 12 or 13 times this same point in those years. So there's a sense out there that people want to do that. It's optional, of course. Anyone can go in and vote in the polling place on game day, on election day as well, but people seem to be attracted to this option.
Mr. Chair, if I might have a follow-up for the Secretary.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Secretary Simon, do you have funds available or resources to do a supplementary election judge training if for some reason election judges are unable to, unwilling, or feel in their own personal public, their own personal health situation, do not want to engage in being an election judge? I have suggested, and at the end of last session was very close to introducing a bill, but the time ran out, to encourage college students, since they may be on furlough at home, who knows, and doing remote learning, that they make great candidates and great way for them to give back as a civic duty. And I'm just wondering if you are planning on some supplemental training to be able to meet those needs.
Mr. Secretary.
Yes, thank you. And Mr. Chair and Representative Driscoll, yeah, thank you. You've really zeroed in on what, to me anyway, is the key issue, which is getting 30,000 people to do that job under these circumstances. That's what it takes in Minnesota, 30,000 people. Frustration is the word, but one limitation of our office is, you know, we don't hire and train election judges. We don't do that. That happens at the city and county level. But we feel the need this year in particular to give them a boost, give them an assist. So, yes, we're looking at not just colleges, but high schools. You can do that job as of 16 years old. And we're not letting the summer pass. You know, we're in that sort of dead zone of summer for colleges and for high schools where students aren't in class. And we don't know what the situation will be in fall. So we're reaching out already to other groups that have contacts with young people, whether that's Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, 4-H, other groups around the state that throughout the summer will continue to have contacts. You can't wait till Labor Day or late August to get young people to do that job. And I think embedded in your question, Representative O'Driscoll, is, excuse me, one of the central challenges here is that election judges skew a good bit older. We know that in Minnesota and everywhere. And that's precisely the group that's the most vulnerable to COVID-19 and that, for whatever reason, might just take themselves out of the hunt this year. We have anecdotal evidence. I'm sure you've heard it. I know I have many times. There's someone, a senior staff person in our office, whose mother has been an election judge for 25 years, but she's decided to sit this one out this year, because she's in her 70s and she just doesn't want to risk anything. So we need 30,000 people to do that job. They're locally hired and trained, but we in our office want to give them as much of an assist as possible so that we can fill those slots. Because if you look what happened in Wisconsin, you look what happened last week to some extent in Georgia, that's at the root of some of the problems, where at the last minute you have some complement of election judges who just don't want to do the job. They've taken the training, they've signed up, but for whatever reason, they just don't want to expose themselves or take the risk. And in the last minute, you have an absence or a lack of election judges. So we don't want that to happen. So we're working hard on that issue.
Mr. Chair, one final request of the Secretary, and it's just okay. That as a statement, and hopefully he can respond yes to that.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Secretary Simon. It is my hope that you'll stay in communications with the leadership of the House Elections Committee, should you see that during this special session, or we anticipate future special sessions, to get you the appropriate funding and things that you need to be able to continue with the bipartisanly and bicamerally supported legislation that I've heard from a lot of people, that there's a comfort level with continuing to hold our elections in the traditional manners and confines of how we've done that in the state of Minnesota. So again, Mr. Secretary, I encourage you to keep the leadership of this committee informed of your needs and requests to support the spirit and intent of that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Secretary, and members.
Mr. Secretary, would you like to say yes, you will?
Yes, absolutely, I will, and I hope I do. I talk with a number of you, you know, fairly regularly, but I'm always available to anyone on this committee. You know where to find me. I'm happy to have offline conversations. You can call or text me. Many of you have my mobile number, and so I'm always available to you. And that includes, by the way, Mr. Chair, your suggestions, you know, not just questions, but your answers. If you have an idea about election judge recruitment, as Representative O'Driscoll just did, or you have an idea about any other administrative detail, happy to take your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And with that, Representative Nash renews his motion to re-refer House File 124 to Government Operations. If the clerk could take the roll, that would be great.
Chair Dean.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Bernardi.
Yes.
Representative Helderson.
Yes.
Representative Mann.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative New.
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
There's 8 ayes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was beginning to wonder there for a little bit, but from my own side.
Well, Representative Nash, looks like you may be attending a you're on government operations, so
I
guess you're going to be there anyway. So congratulations. Next, we'll move to House File 116. That is a bill that I have. It's the Restore the Vote bill. Those of you who've been following along recently, we do know that Restore the Vote is also part of a larger package currently operating, I believe, in House File 75. It's a bill that's part of the larger public safety bills that Chair Mariani has, and I believe that Representative Moran is the current author of the original bill. This bill is another bill to clone to make sure that it makes the stops, and I want to be sure that everybody here on elections who may not be on those other committees have the opportunity to discuss. And that's why the bill is before us. This bill will be referred to government or operations, and then on to ways and means, where it will meet up with the other package bills that are currently moving forward. So I just want to say that this is a bill you all are familiar with. It's a bill that's been involved and discussed extensively over the past nearly decade I've been in the House, but I believe it was first introduced in 2002. And it's a bill, of course, that will allow those individuals who are convicted of felonies, if they are out in public, are able to participate in our elections. So that would include individuals that have been released from their time inside of an institution, as well as those individuals that are currently under probation and may have never stepped a day into a facility. So with that, I believe we have one testifier. I will let Secretary Simon present testimony, and then we'll move. There is an amendment, and then we'll discuss the amendment. So, Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's a pleasure for me to be before you testifying on this bill. As you know, I have before, and as Representative Dean, the author, has said, this has been something that I know we've discussed quite a bit. I think it's taken on a greater urgency, though. I think investing in our democracy is particularly important now, particularly important in this year, and particularly important in the light of the last 3 weeks. I think if we've learned anything from the last 3 weeks, it's the need for healing, it's the need for reconciliation, it's the need for unity, and it's the need, I would say, for us, all of us, me included, everyone, to rethink things a little bit. And so I think this bill is part of that. We have more than 50,000 people in Minnesota who can't vote, even though they have, they're not in prison. They've done their time, if they've done any time, and many haven't done any time. The prison part was suspended. But over 50,000, somewhere between 50 and 60,000 people who are in that camp. And I know that in Minnesota, we believe in second chances. And, you know, these are people who are working to reestablish themselves, who, again, have done their time, they're out among us. Someone has determined that they are worthy to be among the rest of society, that they're not outcasts like they once were when they were in prison. That's what prison is. You're cast out. And when you're out of that situation and still treated as a civic or outcast or an outcast from democracy, that's going to have an effect. And it's going to have an effect that I don't think any of us want. And so this is an opportunity. It's a second chance. It's something that sets an example for the children of ex-offenders. You know, there are a ton of studies out there about what this does for the next generation, when someone can be a part of their democracy, when they can have a say in who governs them and how. It makes a real difference on that next generation, which is something I'm sure that we all want in this committee. From an administration standpoint, I can tell you, from the administration standpoint, it's a no-brainer. Right now, it's difficult. And it's not just difficult. I don't just mean that it's tough for election judges or tough at polling places. You have some tragic consequences and results. Every year, there are a few cases, and you've heard and read about them, of people who get it wrong on both sides. You hear every year, and we get the reports in our office, as you'd expect. Every year, there are some handful or a couple handfuls of people who inadvertently vote because they think they got the right to vote back. They think that we're North Dakota, or we're Iowa, or we're Florida, or we're another state. They didn't bother to check, or they were misinformed. They believe they had the right to vote back. And they go and they register to vote, or they vote, and they thereby commit a felony. And then on the other side, you have people who get it wrong the other way. People who are totally off paper, been off paper for years, and are under the misimpression that they have a lifetime ban on voting, and discover years later that they could have been voting for 10 or 15 or 20 years. And so from the standpoint of administration, it's a bright line rule. If you're in prison, you can't vote. If you're not in prison, if you've been deemed worthy to get out, you can vote. It's a direction, again, that other states have gone near us, Iowa, North Dakota, Florida, Indiana, other states as well. This is the national trend, and it's a very bipartisan trend. And so I ask you, in the name of second chances, to consider this bill, even if you haven't before, even if the arguments didn't sway you before. I think now is the time for a time of reconciliation, a healing, and a time for all of us to consider this. And just one more article. At the time of Minnesota's founding, there were about 75 felonies on the books. That's it. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of different felonies. The net is so much wider. It captures so much more behavior and so many more people. And that's something that I think was never intended at the time that Minnesota was founded. So I asked for your support. I asked for rethink this issue in the name of reconciliation and unity. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. And I think now we will go to the amendment, and we'll let other members speak after we address the amendment. So, Representative Nash, you have Amendment A1?
I do, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1.
Okay. And thank you.
Mr. Chair, the A1 is actually an amendment that we've all voted on previously. If memory serves me correctly, on the floor, this was accepted by you at one point during our floor debate. That says that if somebody who was convicted of a felony pertaining to voter fraud or voter issues, that they would not be eligible to do this restorative voting. So that is the amendment, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Nash.
And Mr. Chair, I don't believe I need to request a roll call. That's because that's the matter that we have to vote anyway. So,
yeah.
Very good.
So any questions, any comments? I believe that there may be a question from Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with regard to this amendment, I'm going to read it one more time. So keep okay. Discussing.
thank you. Thank you, Representative Halverson. And Representative Nash, I'm not 100% sure that I was 100% supportive of this in the past. I do understand the logic behind it. It makes what I would say complete sense. The thing it does, though, is it does create a problem with the bright line that I believe we are trying to approach by saying if you're outside, you cannot vote, or then you can vote. If you're inside, you cannot vote. And I'm not sure there's been many sentences that actually have incarcerated people for voting illegally in the state of Minnesota. I think all those cases involve probation. I could be wrong. If Secretary Simon has the answer to that, that would be wonderful if he can answer that. But my question and my something that I'd like to inquire about is we know that there are conditions of probation that oftentimes individuals have as one of the things they have to do while they're on probation. Many times, some of those conditions are things that are legal for all of us to participate in. Sometimes it has to do with consumption of alcohol or other type substances that someone under probation has to follow as part of their condition of probation. And I would like to look into having conversations with folks at public safety and folks at Department of Correction to see if this is something that could, don't want to say would be standard, but pretty much applied directly to those individuals who may be convicted of felony voting fraud. And we know that this number is very, very small. And so that's what would be my suggestion. At this time, Representative Nash, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to support your amendment, but I think that the logic is completely right. I'm just not sure that the actual how this actually gets constructed after that is going to help us or hurt us. So, Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, I that is your prerogative to oppose us. That's certainly nothing that I'm going to combat, but I will tell you that, you made it sound as though this is not something that we've ever done in the past. And I would remind you that many of the things that we do here at the legislature are in anticipation of things that may happen in the future. And we try to craft law to accommodate for that. But again, your committee, your vote, you have a majority. You can choose to put the amendment on or not. But I think that given your own words that you it's logical. I'm a little mystified as to why you would oppose it. But again, that's your prerogative. And I'll be done. We can move to a vote.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to allow other members to speak because I'm sure there are some members that might have some thoughts regarding this as well. So I believe the first person out here is Representative New. Representative New to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps this is a question for Representative Nash, or perhaps it's for you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that many people just receive felony probation for these kinds of offenses. They're never incarcerated. Currently under law, if they receive felony probation, their voting rights are still restricted. Is that correct?
Under current law, yes. Currently, yes, their voting rights are restricted.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify that yes, it may be felony probation, but that is still in line with current law. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have a lot of concerns with this amendment. I think that it would behoove all of us as members of this committee to go back and read the report that the OLA created on voter registration in Minnesota. They found a number of things, including the fact that our voter registration system is and voting system are very secure. When it came to crossing the line with regard to whether or not somebody was eligible to vote. It was clear from reading the report that our state laws actually create the problem, that we do not have a problem with things like voter impersonation, where somebody shows up saying that they're somebody that they're not, or saying that showing up and saying that they're a person who has been deceased, or any of those kinds of stories that we hear. The fact is the vast majority of problems with the voting system are people who register to vote when they are not eligible, particularly because of the way that our laws are written on felony probation. And it is because we have not made clear communications about this to people who might be on probation when they go off probation. It's been a very hard law for citizens to understand and navigate. And I asked specifically when the Office of the Legislative Auditor was presenting this report, if we were essentially creating, criminals, creating felons by the ways that our laws are written, because they've been so hard to navigate. And we the answer was affirmative, that this is tripping people up. And why we would do that, I don't understand. And so I think that the effect of this amendment would be to further punish people who had already been kind of tripped up by the system. And so I don't think that there's an element of fairness when it comes to these laws, because it's clear that from analysis that the law itself is problematic in creating confusion among people attempting to vote after they serve their sentence. So I don't think that I can support this amendment either.
And Mr. Chair, if I could address that.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at the Journal of the House when this amendment was offered previously, it's interesting, every member of this committee voted in the affirmative to put this amendment on the floor debate previously. I can send this out to you, or I will do so afterwards. I guess you maybe can certainly change your mind. But I just thought I would point that out. I have the Journal of the House from that day. It was then Senate File 2227, Third Engrossment, as amended. And you all voted for it. So I'll leave that to you then.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be sure that we are not questioning motives or questioning votes. I think that members have the ability. This is a different bill and a different amendment and a different day. And we can, members have the right to ask these questions and vote how they want to. So let's not question our motives.
And Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure I had absolutely no intent of questioning motives. I'm merely pointing out actions that were previously taken. So my friend, Representative Halverson, you're wrong on my questioning of your motives. That had nothing to do with my point. So thank you.
First off, I will get a little bit of control here. I don't think she accused you of questioning motives, but we always need to be aware of doing that. I believe that the last time we voted on this amendment, it was being proposed for a much larger elections bill. And I believe that many of us, and as you're looking at the previous vote on that date, probably or may have voted for this amendment. But then I also know that there were several of us on this committee that probably didn't vote for final passage of that bill. So, I mean, we can talk specifically about previous votes. We all know that situations change and you know, this is what we have before us today, and I would just recommend that, you know, folks vote how they feel, and if there's no other comments at this time, I think we should go ahead and move to a vote, and I believe that there may be some comfort. I don't think you actually requested a roll call vote, Representative Nash, but I know that many in some committees, they are requiring to actually go through a voice vote, and some committees regarding
Mr. Chair, I did say I don't believe I need a roll call because that is the process that we have to pursue. But if you'd like, I will request a roll call. Thank you.
Well, Representative Nash, I know that some committees have allowed for voice votes via remote hearings, and some committees have gone through a roll call. So that, I guess this would be your call, Representative Nash. I'm fine with a voice vote, but, you know, I would leave that to you as the author of the amendment.
I'll go with a roll call, sir.
Okay. With a roll call being requested, we will go through and vote. If the clerk could take the roll, that would be great.
Chair Dean?
I will be a no today.
Representative Bonner? Representative Bonner?
Sorry, no.
Representative Bernardi?
No.
Representative Halverson?
No.
Representative Mann?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yep.
Representative New?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Aye.
There are 5 no's and 3 yes.
Okay, this amendment does not prevail. It is not adopted. And we will now go back to the original bill. And I believe some of you may have some questions or comments. And then I'm hoping to sort of close us out. So Representative Halverson, you had your hand raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And boy, this conversation could not be more timely as we are in the midst of raising up ways that our systems have historically hurt people of color, especially Black people in our communities. And if folks are doing their research, as so many people seem to be doing now, and digging into the background of how some of our laws have been made, this actually fits into a pattern of trying to disenfranchise Black Minnesotans from voting. And I will, if you look at, there's some great history out there. There's a great documentary on Netflix right now, 13th. There are some wonderful books, some wonderful writings by Bryan Stevenson that start to document the ways that our laws are written in a way to uphold racism in our society. And I wasn't very aware of this. The more I've studied it, the more it's clear to me that we need to take a really hard look at the impacts that our laws have on communities of color and where this language comes from. And when it comes to felon voting, this language comes directly out of old Jim Crow laws. And so I think it behooves all of us to look for fairness and understand the way that the justice system works. And Black Americans did not have the right to vote until, you know, we passed the Voting Rights Act in the 60s. And even then, it's been a struggle to make sure that people have access to the ballot. This is the kind of law that was put in place to keep access to the ballot from communities. And so I think it's high time to get this law off the books. I think that it's high time to make sure that it's clear for people. I spoke earlier about the fact that people who are navigating the probation system because of the way that we charge crimes in this state are really struggling with that. Minnesota has far more people on probation than other states. And for many, many more years, we've heard testimony of people who are on probation for 20 years or more. You know, that's time to raise a child from infancy to adulthood and never get the right to vote on who their school board member is or vote on who represents you in at the Capitol to vote on education policy. And it's a pretty serious disenfranchisement for people who are in society, who are working, and it's far too precious of a right to take away from people who are living in society, working, raising families, and carrying out their sentence without violating their parole. So I'm very much in favor of this, and I really, really encourage all of us to pause and think about the way that we support enfranchisement in this state during this time when this is top of mind for so many of us. So I will just say personally, I remember my first term, Representative Mariani was on this committee, I was too, and he asked a question about when this law went into effect. And he asked the question about the motivation for the law, and it had never dawned on me that we could use our laws to keep people from the ballot systematically, to hurt communities systematically by keeping them from the ballot. And that was eye-opening, and I have since learned a lot more about it and really am appreciative that we get to vote on this today. And I encourage everybody to make sure that we do everything we can to give people the right to the ballot. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Halverson, for those poignant comments. Is there anyone else? I don't see anyone hand raised. So I will go into some closing comments here. I'm going to step off what I was probably originally going to say and tell a personal story. I think many of you know that in 1976, I was convicted of a felony burglary. I was locked up for several months. And when I got out, I was disappointed that I couldn't vote. But I also thought that I had lost my right to vote forever. I believe that Secretary Simon spoke to that earlier. And so in 1982, I applied for a pardon from the state of Minnesota with the primary purpose of being able to participate in voting. I'm not unique in individuals that have been convicted of a felony. We hear stories all the time of candidates that are out knocking on doors around election time, and someone comes to the door and, you know, we give our stump speech and they're like, wow, you sound great. I really wish I could vote for you, but I'm not allowed to vote. And inevitably, sometimes the question gets asked is, well, why can't you vote? And some of those individuals say, well, I've been convicted of a felony. And that always leads me, and I hope all of you, to say, well, are you still on paper? Are you still under supervision or probation? And a lot of times people say, nah, I've been off for about 10 years. And you tell them that, well, actually, in the state of Minnesota now, you do have your right to vote restored. And many of them say, well, it's just not worth it. I don't want to risk getting in trouble. I'm leading a good life and all of that. And I think that speaks to a system that we've created that Representative Halverson spoke about earlier, and that for those individuals, the inability to participate in our elections is something that is, I don't want to say just a burden, but it's something that troubles them oftentimes when election day rolls around, knowing that other friends, other family members, and other folks can participate in our election process. And as Secretary Simon mentioned, if we deem them safe enough to be out in public, if we expect them to have a job, we expect them to be the best citizen they can, then that issue around their civic responsibility of voting becomes critical. We know that pro-civic behavior, which includes voting, is something that makes it and helps reduce the incidences of recidivism for those individuals. We also know that this is not just a issue of Black and Brown communities. In the state of Minnesota, roughly 65% of the people that are restricted from voting due to current status of felony conviction live outside of Hennepin and Ramsey County. I know that some people believe that this is an issue for Democrats. I know that some people say this is an issue for Republicans, and I would say that it doesn't positively or negatively impact any group more than the other, while at the same time, we know that, it, as Secretary Simon mentioned, this becomes a generational thing too. So the people that are impacted are people throughout the whole state of Minnesota, and I think that this is something that, you know, has been discussed, has tried to move forward in the state of Minnesota for the past almost two decades. We know that we're not doing something that's totally radical in trying to allow those individuals, once they're out in public, to be able to vote. We know that states like Indiana, states like Utah, states like North Dakota, that I don't think anybody is going to say these are, you know, progressive liberal states. They allow individuals, once they are out of incarceration or on probation, to actually participate in the election. So if these groups can do it, I believe that we should do it. And I would ask all members to support this. And I would renew my motion to refer this to government operations. With that, I will have the clerk take the roll.
Chair Dean.
Yes.
Representative Baumer. Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Bernardi.
Yes.
Representative Helberson.
Yes.
Representative Mann.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative New.
No.
Representative Odrisco.
No.
There are five yes, three no's.
Okay, so we passed this. This will now go to government operations. I just want to thank all of you today. I wish I knew what was going to happen in the next several days. I don't think any of us really know. It's quite possible that we may have other reasons to come together as a committee, and we will try to give everybody as much notice as possible should that happen. So again, I want to thank you all. And with that, if there's any announcements, I see Representative Bonner has raised her hand literally. So Representative Bonner.
Sorry, just making sure I'm off mute. For a point of clarification and making sure that the record is clean, I apologize. I actually had too many documents open and attempted to move meetings for 6:15, which is actually the Government Operations Committee, not the Elections Committee. I believe our last meeting, according to the calendar, was 3:04, and I believe those were approved via electronic vote. But for perhaps Ms. Vang can confirm that so that we have that straight.
Ms. Vang.
The last meeting was on April 8th, 2020, and that was the remote hearing that we had, the first remote hearing we had. And I did send it for a electronic approval, but I did not get all the members. But here it would be sufficient because we just approved it during this meeting.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, then I'd like to recommend that we move the meetings for the meeting minutes for 4-8.
Representative Bonner, I believe we already did move them. Correct me if I'm wrong. Ms. Fang?
Yes, so earlier, Chair Dean had asked you, Representative Bonner, to move the 4-8 meeting, and you did move it, and it did pass.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Representative O'Driscoll.
That's the issue I brought up after the roll call. Representative Bonner is correct. She did move the June 15 minutes, as she said she had several minutes ahead of her. You said then the April 8th minutes. So there was a conflict between what the member moved and what you asked to vote on. A simple correction vote takes care of all of this.
Let's go ahead and do that. Members, if you could unmute yourself, we will take a clarification vote on the meeting minutes from April 8th. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. Great, no one opposed them. So we have now reofficially adopted with complete clarity the minutes from April 8th. With that, folks, if no one has anything else, we will move this. I will adjourn this meeting and look forward to seeing all of you somewhere, maybe in person, maybe remotely, as we continue on our special session. The meeting's adjourned.